Please take your Bible and let's turn to Ecclesiastes chapter 7 this morning. Ecclesiastes chapter 7. Have you seen any of the news this week? I mean, up-to-date news, not recorded news, but the real-time news. I tell you what, it is concerning about this disease, that the sickness that is really impacting our world. And I don't know if you have seen any of the precautions that you can take in order to protect yourself. It is, this morning, our introduction will also serve as a public service announcement. I understand that what you can do to help minimize your exposure to this sickness is that you can prevent yourself from touching your eyes, touching your nose, touching your mouth, to cover your mouth, your nose whenever you cough or sneeze, and keep a great distance away from everybody. That's the bottom line of it. And I'll tell you, I want to go back to that first point about not touching your eyes or your nose or your mouth. Because I remember seeing this in print and reading it in print, and this is nothing new. These are just basic, I guess, health precautions. But have you been more conscious these last few days about touching your eyes, about touching your nose, about touching your mouth with your hands? I forgot the big one. I don't want to throw this out there. I need to get it in there. Make sure that you wash your hands regularly too. Really good, with soap and water for about 20 seconds, they say. But since this awareness has been brought to our attention, I have, tell you what, my eyes have itched like crazy. And I tell you what, not just that in my nose. It seems to be like right now I'm talking about it and I can feel a tickle on my nose that just needs to be touched. In my mouth, well, I can't do anything about that. But is it interesting to note that we've just spent a few moments shaking people's hands? And I want you to know I'm terrified right now to reach up and scratch my eye or touch my eye or to touch my nose. And I want you to know I didn't do that before I shook your hand, just so that you know I've got that social grace there. I exercised good judgment there. Hand sanitizer, Miss Debbie, that's what we should probably pass around. But it's interesting to know what it is that we're supposed to do and to actually follow through with it. It is so challenging and so difficult. How many of you right now in these last few moments, Brother Jack's wiping his eyes right now, but he was using a handkerchief. He's got it right there. How many of you, though, that just talking about it has made you, Miss Carolyn's got her tissue out, I see it, and the hand sanitizer's going around up here on the front row. This is the healthy section right up here if you have any questions. They are following all the rules, wiping their hands, sitting away from everybody, there you go. But it's interesting to think about what to do and follow through with it and how difficult it is when you try to just focus on doing that. Because I find myself inadvertently wanting to take off my glasses, and I'm telling you, it itches really bad up here right now. But how many times? No, I don't need a tissue. I'm trying to break myself of that habit. But knowing what to do, and if I give it some great thought, I will find that I will do a really good job for a while, and then eventually I'll be sitting there and I'll wipe my nose or I'll touch my eye, and I realize, you know what, my days are numbered. If that's the way it works, because I just cannot keep my hands away from these places that I know I shouldn't put them right now, especially in this season of sickness. This morning, as we look at Ecclesiastes chapter 7, we're going to look at verses 15 through 29, and we're going to see exercised wisdom. And by way of our introduction, talking about how it is that we know that we can protect ourselves and how difficult it is for us to do that, the real truth about wisdom and the real struggle with wisdom is simply following through with what we know to be right. And it is something that isn't hidden. It's not something that is a mystery to us, that you and I clearly know when we've crossed that boundary from exercising wisdom into exercising folly or wickedness, as Solomon is going to describe it in just a few more verses. As we look at Ecclesiastes chapter 7, verses 15 through 29, we are in the wisdom section of Solomon's observations, where he is going to make some observations this morning that can certainly be overwhelming when we realize the magnitude of what he's saying. And sometimes there have been people who've looked at his conclusions and say, you know what, I look at his message throughout the entire book, and it has been difficult to live with these observations that everything's vanity, that everything is so empty, and that we should just focus on making ourselves happy and living with just the satisfaction from moment to moment that this is all there is. And there are people who read Ecclesiastes with a tragic takeaway that this is the best that there is. As we've been working through Ecclesiastes, we have been able to identify that not just to be wrong, but it's something that you and I can take satisfaction in knowing that in the difficult moments of life, as well as the good moments of life, there is satisfaction in this world. But it's not found in the places that we usually try to find them, in our finances, in our work, or the places that we typically try to invest all of our time and all of our energy. We're looking at Ecclesiastes to help round out our worldview, a right worldview of how you and I live and operate in this life under the sun. And that there is a meaning of life. There is quality of life that is to be attained. We're going to find when we get to the end of the book, he's going to make this all clear and apparent for us. But as we've been working through this series, it's been no surprise or no secret that when you're trying to find satisfaction or happiness in this life right here with just the stuff that surrounds us, it'll never get us that lasting satisfaction. It's the thesis, the point of our study, that Jesus is the secret. Jesus is the answer. That Jesus is the solution. And when you and I learn to be satisfied and content in him, we have a healthy perspective of how to handle the ups and downs of our lives. The problem is, as we've looked at this week in, week out, is that our daily lives just become so overwhelming that they distract us. The pressures we feel at work, the pressures that we have with money and family and health. When you look this morning, we're considering wisdom. Wisdom in the workplace, what does that look like? I'll tell you the short answer of it. Do your job and do it well. And there's some great sound wisdom for work. How do you apply wisdom to your money? Appreciate it. Don't mistake it for what it's not. It's not happiness. But use it wisely. Apply it wisely. And use it when it's needed. And don't use it when it's not needed. Don't be wasteful with your money. Wisdom in your family. Now, this is a tough one because our family can certainly tax our hearts as they make poor judgments. Or maybe it's just not just a decision. Maybe it's just some kind of circumstance or some friction. Maybe their health weighs heavily on us. And learning to understand how you and I navigate our daily lives, whether it be in our health failures and our family's health failures and in just the pressures that we feel, you and I understand that living and applying wisdom to our life is what the Christian life looks like. It's not just sitting and getting a head full of knowledge. It's not about packing it all in and coming to church on Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night, and having a notebook full of notes, but never, ever living out the truth that the Scriptures teach us. You see, there's a greater purpose in our life living here now under this sun, and it is this. Hope-filled life purposely and intentionally thrives in our surrender under the Son, Jesus. Today's focus as we look at Ecclesiastes chapter 7, verses 15 through 29. Let's be honest. There is not enough genuine, godly wisdom in the world. We're going to look at three different points this morning. How our lives need to be balanced in wisdom, protected by wisdom, and that sometimes we find ourselves abandoned in wisdom. Let's dive right on in at this time. Ecclesiastes chapter 7. Let's read along verses 15 through 18. All things have I seen in the days of my vanity. There is a just man that perisheth in his righteousness, and there is a wicked man that prolongeth his life in his wickedness. Be not righteous overmuch, neither make thyself overwise. Why shouldest thou destroy thyself? Be not overmuch wicked, neither be thou foolish. Why shouldest thou die before thy time? It is good that thou shouldest take hold of this. Yea, also from this, withdraw not thy hand. For he that feareth God shall come forth of them all. And for some people this morning who are looking for a life verse, that it looks like the conclusion here is that you and I need to walk a little bit in the wicked side and walk a little bit in the righteous side because, I mean, let's just face it, that seems to be what the text is saying, and that certainly would make life so much easier. We could free ourselves of the guilt when we fail, and that knowing that we can pat ourselves on the back for the good that we do. I don't know if you picked up on that when we were reading through Ecclesiastes chapter 7, verses 15, 16, and 17. It sounds like the conclusion is that. Don't be too hard on yourself. Don't be a goody-goody. Live a little bit on both sides of the fence. But I want to call your attention to the obvious observation here. The observation is this: there is a great error in being too righteous. What? There's such a thing as being too righteous? Yeah, absolutely. As a matter of fact, as we go back to verse 15, let's just unpeel that onion and look as we arrive at that observation. He says in verse 15, there is a just man that perisheth in his righteousness, and there is a wicked man that prolongeth his life in his wickedness. There's someone whose life is cut short because of their exercise of their righteousness, and there's someone who lives a really long life knowing how to keep themselves free from harm, and it's directed by their wickedness. Seems to be that if we're going to live here life under this world, we want to live as long as we can. I think that's probably an intent of everyone in this room this morning. Sounds pretty good, doesn't it? Live as long as you can. And the observation here is that the righteous person might die sooner, or the wicked person lives longer. But please resist this temptation to think that living a life that's really long is an indicator of how righteous we are. That a person who lives a really long life isn't necessarily wicked or righteous. Isn't it interesting how our life cycles work? When you look back at the earlier part of the last century, missionaries who were called to go to the foreign field, who would leave for the field, knowing that the average lifespan of a missionary on the mission field in the world at that time might be 3 weeks to 3 months. There were people who were willing to sign up and go and lay down their life. And you would think that someone who's setting their life aside, who's walking away from their family fortunes like William Borden of Yale, who walked away from a family empire to go and serve in the foreign mission field and did live a very short life, it would seem to be that those people are the ones who should live a really long life. And that person, that wicked person, who's thrown their life away, lived their life full of greed and lived their life full of cheating and lived their life full of dishonesty, that's the life that should be cut short. Let's face it, that's the way our judgment works, right? We have a value system that thinks we should reward righteousness by giving it long life, and we should punish wickedness by having our life cut short. Now, we do understand that when you make poor decisions, that there are natural consequences that do come with poor decisions. But how is it so, in the fairness under the sun here, that a person could live and be a good person and die prematurely, or a person live wickedly and live a really long life? What gives in the scheme of this life? What is God up to? Well, the observation is this: don't use the length of life as a fair indicator of what it means to live righteously. Because a wicked person can prolong his life by his wickedness. Do you know how to prolong your life? It's called survival. I want you to know, in the last few weeks, we've been looking at the news and thinking about what to do here. I was asking Melina, what should we do to prepare in the event of this? And I know some people say, well, you're an alarmist, you're worried about this. I said, no, I'm not trying to be an alarmist about this. How many cans of soup would be enough? Remember a few weeks ago when I asked you, how much money would it take for you to consider yourself wealthy? How many cans of soup would it take you to be prepared? And a lot of you say, no cans of soup. It's measured in hot dogs. That's how we need to measure how successful we're going to navigate these next few weeks. But the truth is, if survival is our goal, that's a fairly easy enough standard to try to achieve. You don't take a lot of chances. You don't risk a lot. You could probably isolate yourself if you were to lock yourself into your house right now today and live out the rest of your days without any contact, with having your food delivered. You could probably survive a lot longer than someone who's out working and being exposed to this sickness that's floating around. You could probably live a little bit longer life, but what kind of quality of life is that? Where you're isolated, where you're just trying to survive. And remember, the observations that we're looking at in the book of Ecclesiastes isn't about how to survive life. It's about moving beyond survival. It's about living in satisfaction. And that's what's so sad for Solomon's conclusions, is that there is no lasting satisfaction to be found in this life under the sun apart from God. So if you and I are thinking that a long life would be a satisfied life, know this: what is the misery that accompanies life? What quality of life do we have when we cut ourselves off, when we try to do everything that we can to stretch out our days, even to the exclusion of others, even to the harm of others, even to the detriment of others? I wouldn't be surprised, and I'm not trying to be pessimistic here, but I wouldn't be surprised as we look at the events looking ahead, if we don't hear about some people in this world doing some mighty terrible things to try to squeak out a few more days of living here under this earth, because wicked people certainly know how to prolong their life through their wickedness. So don't use a long life as an indicator of righteousness. But I want you to go back and understand that when we're talking about righteousness here in Ecclesiastes chapter 7, verses 15 and 18, the observation isn't made about righteous living, but rather self-righteous living. Because if you're looking at the godless spectrum, there are two ends of that spectrum. There is full-blown wickedness. And then you have the other end of that spectrum, where a lot of people like to live in. It is that self-righteous end of the spectrum. You might call it Pharisaicalism. I know a lot of times we throw around a term legalist, but that legalist is someone who's trying to earn their way to heaven. So Pharisaicalism is someone who thinks that they are better because they have chosen the more difficult path. And they want you to know that they have chosen the more difficult path and that they are superior to you. The self-righteous, the self-certified self-righteous person, that is no way to live. You ever known anybody like that in your life? Self-righteous people? Self-righteous person is that person that loves to just let you know about how good and how wonderful they are and how little and how worthless and how wrong you are. I don't like to get into arguments with self-righteous people because there's never a way that you can win an argument with a self-righteous person because they have certified themselves as being the foremost authority. So understand this. When we're looking at life, and we're talking here in terms of righteousness and wickedness, we're not looking at a healthy explanation or a healthy presentation of righteousness. We're dealing with self-righteousness. And the observation is this, that both extremes do meet the same outcome. It doesn't matter if you live self-righteously and live as devout as you try to attempt to live your life, certified and standing in your own strength. It doesn't matter if you live a life and your life is cut short, or if you are living wicked and your life is prolonged. In the fairness and in the scheme of things, both outcomes end the same. One just ends sooner rather than later. So the observation here that the righteous person dies prematurely and that the wicked person lives a prolonged life, understand there are no winners in that outcome because neither party lives forever. Self-righteous, as the term is used here in Ecclesiastes chapter 7, verse 16, be not righteous over much, neither make thyself over wise. The interesting use of these words here, self-righteous, over-wise living, is just as destructive as wicked living. And I realize that I'm speaking to the choir this morning. I'm probably speaking to a room full of people who have settled this long, long ago and don't struggle with self-righteous pharisaicalism. I don't know if that's true for me to have said that. Because I know in my heart that sometimes in my self-importance, that even sometimes in my life, that I think about all of the struggles and all of the pressures that I go through, and I sometimes take confidence in my own strength, and that's not right. You see, the struggle of living in wickedness is we're under judgment. The folly of living under wickedness is just because you escape the consequences does not mean that you're going to escape the consequences. You can delude yourself and think that, hey, I haven't been caught, nothing has happened bad, so it must be okay for me to continue in this manner. Judgment day is coming. But for the self-righteous person, the self-righteous person can live just as destructively as the person who's given to folly. How in the world could it be so? Because I know, and I have heard it many, many times when we talk about those better days, the way things used to be. You know, when everyone understood or everyone knew when you talked about Bible words because our society, our culture was so religious. That life here in the South was so much easier because everyone seemed to be God-fearing. And I do hear this a whole lot, day in and day out, that we really do live in a very religious community. But the reality is, if you look around, there's a lot of people not where they should be this morning. There's a lot of people who are self-certifying, who are justified in their self-righteousness. They feel pretty good about the good things that they do throughout the week. And that ought not to be so. What's more delusional? To live in wickedness and think just because you... Or to live a life where you think you're supreme, you think that you're better, you think that everything is... And you're the only one who is right because you are self-righteous. Both outcomes are equally destructive, we find here in these observations. But just to be truthful, as we continue on in verse 17, understand that wicked living surely does bring an early end. Verse 17, be not overmuch wicked, neither be thou foolish. Why shouldest thou die before thy time? And it's again, overwise, overmuch. Those words seem like it sounds to be, you know, the secret to having a healthy, happy life is to not be overmuch. You know, we talk about being overweight. What is that measurement? What is that exact number? What is that number that actually hits that, the amount that you're considered overweight? That overword is the one that we hang ourselves and our confidence on. Well, I'm not that far over. I was carrying a load in my pickup truck, my old pickup truck. When I bought the thing, it was no surprise to me that it was not designed to carry very much weight. Inside the owner's manual, as I can pull out one of the flyers that was there in the truck as I looked at it, it encouraged me about all of the benefits. It was talking about what I could accomplish with my truck. And it literally said on the sales advertisement that my truck could successfully carry bags of mulch. Bags of mulch? Caleb, that's not a whole lot of weight. And once I tried to carry a load of rocks in the back of my truck, because I can carry bags of mulch, I was carrying a bin of rocks to put out in my yard. And I noticed something, that when the forklift set those rocks on the back of my truck went down, way down. I come to find out that it was over its weight limit. That was the reality. Every time I hit a bump driving down the road, I would hear my wheels scrape on my fender wells. And for those of you who just saw me spit, please protect yourselves. Cover your eyes, your mouths, your nose. I apologize for that. But it was the overweight that I could not believe. I thought, well, what do I do? So when I got home, I started taking out the rocks to figure out how much would actually get there. As I was carrying them around to drive them around the yard to put them out, it was amazing. Do you know how much overweight was in my truck, apparently? All of the rocks. I shouldn't have been carrying any rocks in my truck because it was only designed to carry bags of mulch. The idea of the over sounds like we can enjoy a little bit of both worlds. That was my takeaway in coming to it. I'm thinking, oh, Lord, I'm going to stand before the congregation this morning, and I'm going to open your word, and your counsel to us this morning is don't be too righteous and don't be too wicked. And it sounds like the middle ground is enjoy a little bit of both. But wisdom is learning to live in the balance between the two errors. And remember, those errors are wickedness and self-righteousness. Where's the middle ground of that? Godly righteousness. Not my own self-righteousness and not exploring my own wickedness, but rather living a balanced life of godly wisdom, godly righteousness in my own life. So the warning here isn't really about enjoying a little bit of self-righteousness and a little bit of wickedness. It's not mixing wickedness with self-righteousness, and they kind of cancel one another out. It is quite simply living free of both errors. So if you came this morning self-righteous, you have an altar this morning that you can leave it at. Because a balanced life abandons wickedness and self-righteousness for honest, godly living. Let's look now at verses 19 through 24 as the preacher continues his observations. Wisdom strengthened the wise more than 10 mighty men which are in the city. For there is not a just man upon the earth that doeth good and sinneth not. Also take no heed unto all words that are spoken, lest thou hear thy servant curse thee. For oftentimes also thine own heart knoweth that thou thyself likewise hast cursed others. All this have I proved by wisdom. I said, I will be wise, but it was far from me. That which is far off and exceeding deep, who can find it out? As we move into a life that is protected by wisdom, Please understand this morning that the secret of a righteous life isn't about having great health or great wealth or even great respect. You know, the normal indicators that you and I look for as to whether someone is really blessed. I think that's a temptation in the modern church today, and it certainly does make for some really easy listening, because I want to prop my ear and I want someone to tell me that God wants to bless me so generously. He wants to make me rich. He wants to make me happy. He wants to give me the wildest desires of my heart. When you look at to where the heart of man is, as we look at this morning, that is a very terrifying proposition, that God wants to give you the desires of your heart. I'm not trying to build a straw man argument this morning, but understand, when you and I look at what a real, truly righteous life looks like, it's not always a life that's marked by great health, or by great wealth, or even great respect. When I was working on my graduate recital, graduating from college, I was working on the story of a man named J. Frank Norris, who was a very influential preacher in his day. He actually pastored two churches at the same time, one in Fort Worth, Texas, and one in Detroit, Michigan. And the interesting thing about this man is he had an incredibly large church. He had an incredibly large membership at his church. It's the man who ran his Sunday school program that had shared some observations that he had seen of this great preacher. This man, whose name was Louis Ensminger, died and rests today in an unmarked grave, but he was responsible for the largest Sunday school program in the nation in his day. And he died in obscurity. And we oftentimes think, well, that shouldn't be that way. That, I mean, he was doing great things for God. There were a lot of people that were benefiting from his administration. There were a lot of people who were coming to know Jesus through the church programs that he was involved with. How in the world could this man die in obscurity? Well, great health, great wealth, great respect, having your name written down and passed on for generations isn't an indicator of what righteousness looks like. Wisdom that's exercised, it's not about living free from trouble, but knowing to whom to turn in times of failure, in our own failures. That's the secret to righteous living. It's about living a life that's real and honest. And the whole purpose of this series, one of the main objectives of this series, is to understand that when life throws a curveball, when life is hard and difficult, life is fulfilling and satisfying in Jesus. And don't let your circumstance rob you of that truth, that wisdom, that hope. Satisfaction is found only in Jesus. The harsh reality about righteous living, and this is what's humbling, it's that it's not a product of our own making. That's what the self-righteous person tries to do. The self-righteous is the person who tries to certify, that tries to say, look, look at all I have done. Look, I want you to recognize, I want you to give me attention. I want you to give me the respect that's due, that I deserve, because I have done all of this. No, the reality about righteous living is that there's not a one of us that's righteous. As we look, we realize this morning that there is not a just man upon the earth, he tells us in verse 20. One that doeth good and sinneth not. There is not a just man upon the earth. And that's an uncomfortable truth. But it's not a new truth. Because Paul tells us in Romans 10, Romans chapter 3, verses 10 and 11, very familiar verse to us. You probably came to faith. Someone shared this with you as as they were explaining the gospel to you, as it is written, there is none righteous, no, not one. There is none that understandeth, there is none that seeketh after God. Doesn't it sound difficult at Christians? We emphasize, especially Baptists, we emphasize the fact that man is sinful, because that's not a very inspiring message. If you really want to inspire, tell people that they can rise beyond that in order to rise beyond our sin. We've got to first understand that we are sinners, but we don't rise above that sin in our own strength like the self-righteous person tries to do, or the wicked person that has no concern or no care. It's because wisdom lives in the fear of God. It's that healthy assessment of who I am. So we talk about it a lot in our services, about us being sinners saved by grace. It is not a badge of honor that we wear, because when you go back and you look and consider the wickedness in your own life, in your past, sometimes we are overcome with the guilt and the shame that we connect with that. But living free in Christ realizes that he didn't just take care of our sin problem, but he removed from us not just the penalty, also the guilt, and that there is freedom in Jesus. Not in my own strength. It's living in the fear of who he is, living in the fear of God. So please understand this, that wisdom exercised is certainly more than just a good intention. Look at verse 21. Also take no heed to all the words that are spoken, lest thou hear thy servant curse thee. For also thine own heart knoweth that thou likewise thyself likewise hast cursed others. You know what? If you and I listen to what's being said about us, we're probably going to hear some unflattering things said about us. And we take it to heart because words do hurt. Words do have a way of really cutting to the quick of our heart. But worse than that reality is that you and I definitely do misuse our words in the same capacity. So just because others speak ill of us doesn't mean that we are free from that same error. And even though wisdom says, I know I should keep my mouth shut, have you ever found it is so easy to open up your mouth and let hurt, let something harmful, let something gossipful slip right off your tongue without any regard for the consequences and with no consideration that that's wrong and that's not what righteous living looks like? No, wisdom is knowing that I am guilty of the same sins I see in others. And godly wisdom cannot be found apart from God. Isaiah chapter 53, verse 6, all we like sheep have gone astray. We have turned everyone to his own way, and the Lord hath laid on him the iniquity of us all. When you and I can take an honest appraisal of who we are, that godly wisdom, the work of God in our lives, convicting us, leading us to this clear observation, it produces real, true humility. So we don't just throw around that term loosely that we're sinners saved by grace. It's a leveling statement that is used to remind us that we are no better than anybody else on this planet. The self-righteous person doesn't think so. They think that they're all that and a bag of chips. The wicked person doesn't care. But the person who's living in true, honest, godly wisdom is the person who hasn't just taken that honest appraisal of themselves, but lives in the reality that, Lord, there is something more to this life than what my own, what you want for my life. It's not something that we just arrive at, but the scriptures so clearly illustrate it. As we now move into Ecclesiastes chapter 7, verses 25 through 29, as we look and see about the, tragedy of being abandoned in wisdom. The preacher continues, I applied mine heart to know and to search and to seek out wisdom and to reason of things and to know the wickedness of folly and even the foolishness and madness. And I find more bitter than death the woman whose heart is snares and nets and her hands as bands. Whoso pleaseth God shall escape from her, but the sinner shall be taken by her. Behold, I have found, saith the preacher, counting one by one to find out the account, which yet my soul seeketh, but I find not. One man among a thousand have I found, but a woman among all those who have I not found. Lo, this only have I found, that God hath made man upright, and they have sought out many inventions. And I don't know if some of you were listening as we were reading through that, but you're thinking, I like that. Found another life verse. I know what's wrong with that woman that God gave me in my life. It is that she is right here in Ecclesiastes chapter 7. This is my go-to verse to let her know that there is one right and that she's wrong. But before you jump to conclusions, let's unpack and let's look at his observations here. Because the reality is this, don't be surprised at how many people choose error over righteousness. And we're dealing with two errors this morning, self-righteousness and wickedness. Has it ever surprised you when someone chooses error over righteousness? Living in this old sinful world, I want to tell you that sometimes I will hear news, people will tell me something, trying to get a rise out of me, and it doesn't shock me as much. It should shock me, perhaps, but I realize, you know what, that's just the reality that sin rules and reigns in this world, and that men's hearts love wickedness. Men's hearts love darkness rather than light. So sometimes when I hear something that should shock me, it doesn't surprise me. And don't be surprised at how many people choose error over righteousness. Psalm 12, verse 1, help, Lord, for the godly man ceaseth, for the faithful fail from among the children of men. This is the tragedy. It's not so many how many wicked people choose wickedness over righteousness, because that's just the part and the course for living wickedly. It's wrong because they're using the wrong set of standards to certify their life. But what really breaks my heart is when a believer, someone who's walking with Jesus, makes a wrong choice, lives with a wrong action. It breaks my heart. Now that we should never get used to. But when you hear about someone who's self-righteous or someone who's wicked, choosing wickedness, that shouldn't surprise us. Understand the danger and the threat that we are up against. And I want you to understand, we started off talking about this illness running around because the exposure concerns me. I'm concerned about what that sickness could mean for a lot of people that I know. It may affect me. But even so, more than that, it's how it may affect other people that I know and that I love. And for that, I pray for the Lord's deliverance for this terrible, terrible sickness. This growing right now. Remember that sometimes, as David points out, for the godly man even stumbles and falls. For the faithful fell from among the children of men. So be on guard, be cautious, because folly always ensnares the fool. When you were looking at that section about the woman, understand that we're looking at folly, error, being personified. And in this case, as you look through the book of Proverbs, there is oftentimes that error, that wickedness is personified as the harlot, as that woman who's trying to entice the young man from righteousness. In 2 Timothy chapter 3, verses 6 through 7, for of this sort are they which creep into houses and lead captive silly women laden with sins, led away with diverse lusts, ever learning and never able to come to the knowledge of the truth. The problem with folly is that sometimes we get so worked up on what it is that we hear. We pass judgments without understanding all of the truth. And if you have seen or heard any of the results this week or the conclusions that people have made where this disease or the sickness is coming from, I mean, we know what it's coming from. It's coming through transmission. It's people coughing, people sneezing, someone has it. Be careful, because folly has a way of ensnaring us. Folly has a way of leading us into error. But you were probably wondering about verse 28 when he talks about the two types of people that he observes. And he says he looks at 1,000 people and he finds one man. And among the women, there were none. Let's just look at the statistics this morning, because I don't think he's necessarily beating up on one person versus another. It's that a life devoted to honest, godly living is absolutely extremely rare. And if you just put this into a percentage, that's 1,000th of a percent of people that he looks at are following and seeking after godliness. Now that's sad. Maybe he's that one person that he's looking at because he knows his heart. But I think the observation is probably he's not thinking about himself. Maybe he's thinking about one of the prophets that he remembers singing to come to deliver a message to his father. The truth being told. When you start to draw the distinction, maybe you're going to try to settle an argument with your spouse today using Ecclesiastes chapter 7, verse 28. It is that a life devoted to wisdom, godly living, is extremely rare. Because we find in the latter verse 29 that people foolishly look for another solution to their own wickedness. He tells us, "Lo, this only have I found, that God hath made man upright, but they have sought out many inventions." And please know this, don't blame the presence of wickedness in this world on God. Adam and Eve willfully chose to sin in the garden. The wrong choices that you and I make in this life are all squarely on our shoulders. The problem that we have with people who do not apply wisdom is that people are happy to live in their own truth, in abandonment of the real truth that hope is found only in Jesus. After all, Jesus tells us in John 14, verse 6, Jesus saith unto him, "I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man cometh unto the Father but by me." When we consider the sadness, the tragedy of wisdom that's abandoned, just because you may be alone and seeking to live a godly life, free from the error of self-righteousness, free from the error of wickedness, rest assured that a godly life isn't common after all. It doesn't occur naturally. It's not to be found in any other avenue. So many people today delude themselves by thinking that they've got it all figured out. In truth, in order to take that honest appraisal, you've got to realize we don't even have the right tools to make that judgment because our hearts are wicked. So let's trust God. Let's trust His provision of Jesus. Let's not self-sign our own righteousness. And let's not surrender and succumb to our own sense of wickedness. Here's our response this morning. To be honest, there's just not enough genuine, godly wisdom in this world. So abandon both errors of wickedness and self-righteousness. And this morning, realize that only Jesus can give you a new heart to live this life of righteousness. Wisdom isn't necessarily having all of the answers, it's knowing where to go for the answers. Our day and growing in our faith is really, should be the expected outcome of walking with Jesus. But I have known many people who've lived a long time following Jesus and claiming to serve Jesus, but never really moving beyond. Maybe it's because they're trusting in their self-righteousness, or maybe they're trusting in their wickedness, but if we're not trusting in Jesus alone, there's no hope, because that's the answer. So our prayer today is this: Lord, give me the wisdom to fear my own strength that robs me of living in your strength. Do you see what we did there? You were feeling pretty confident that we were looking at somebody else who had a problem. We were looking at somebody else who struggles with issues that we don't, because there's not a one of us in here that would raise their hand and say, I'm self-righteous. And there's not a one of us in here who would raise our hand and say, I'm wicked. Even though this morning I think we've demonstrated that you and I have the propensity for both, and that sometimes you and I fall into the error of both. But the real hope for us this morning is to have the freedom that Jesus gives us when he arrests us from living in our own strength and living in his. Let's follow him. Let's let go of our own strength and follow after his righteousness. Let's all stand this morning as we're dismissed.